listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
It's been 68 years this month since fighting began on the Korean Peninsula that would rage for 3 years, cost millions of lives, and see much of Korea devastated. It's been 65 years since hostilities ceased under an armistice, and 64 years since the U.S. rejected a request by China's Chou Enlai for a peace treaty. That request has been refused by every American president since 1954. On Tuesday morning, President Donald Trump spoke in Singapore after meeting for 5 hours with the head of state of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or North Korea. Today we bring you the first half of the hour-long press conference that he gave after meeting with North Korea's Kim Jong-un.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. We appreciate it. We're getting ready to go back. Had a tremendous 24 hours. We've had a tremendous 3 months, actually, because this has been going on for quite a while. That was a tape that we gave to Chairman Kim and his people. His representatives, and it captures a lot, captures what could be done. And that's a great place, has the potential to be an incredible place between South Korea, if you think about it, and China. That's got tremendous potential, and I think he understands that, and he wants to do what's right.
Stop moving around, please.
It's my honor today to address the people of the world following this very historic summit with Chairman Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Spent very intensive hours together, and I think most of you have gotten the signed document, or you will very shortly. It's very comprehensive. It's going to happen. I stand before you as an emissary of the American people to deliver a message of hope and vision and a message of peace. Let me begin by thanking our incredible hosts in Singapore, especially Prime Minister Lee, friend of mine. This is a country of profound grace and beauty, and we send our warmest wishes to every citizen of Singapore who really made this visit so important and so pleasant, despite all of the work and all of the long hours. I also want to thank President Moon of South Korea. He's working hard. In fact, I'll be speaking to him right after we're finished. Prime Minister Abe of Japan, friend of mine, just left our country. And he wants what's right for Japan and for the world. He's a good man. And a very special person, President Xi of China, who has really closed up that border. Maybe a little bit less so over the last couple of months, but that's okay. But he really has, and he's a terrific person and a friend of mine and really a great leader of his people. I want to thank them for their efforts to help us get to this very historic day. Most importantly, I want to thank Chairman Kim for taking the first bold step toward a bright new future for his people. Our unprecedented meeting, the first between an American president and a leader of North Korea, proves that real change is indeed possible. My meeting with Chairman Kim was honest, direct, and productive. We got to know each other well in a very confined period of time, under very strong circumstance. We're prepared to start a new history, and we're ready to write a new chapter between our nations. Nearly 70 years ago, think of that, 70 years ago, an extremely bloody conflict ravaged the Korean Peninsula. Countless people died in the conflict, including tens of thousands of brave Americans. Yet while the armistice was agreed to, the war never ended to this day, never ended. But now we can all have hope that it will soon end, and it will. It will soon end. The past does not have to define the future. Yesterday's conflict does not have to be tomorrow's war. And as history has proven over and over again, adversaries can indeed become friends. We can honor the sacrifice of our forefathers by replacing the horrors of battle with the blessings of peace. And that's what we're doing, and that's what we have done. There is no limit to what North Korea can achieve when it gives up its nuclear weapons and embraces commerce and engagement with the rest of the world that really wants to engage. Chairman Kim has before him an opportunity like no other, yes, to be remembered as the leader who ushered in a glorious new era of security and prosperity for his people. Chairman Kim and I just signed a joint statement in which he reaffirmed his unwavering commitment to complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. We also agreed to vigorous negotiations to implement the agreement as soon as possible. And he wants to do that. This isn't the past. This isn't another administration that never got it started and therefore never got it done. Chairman Kim has told me that North Korea is already destroying a major missile engine testing site. That's not in your signed document. We agreed to that after the agreement was signed. That's a big thing. For the missiles that they were testing, the site is going to be destroyed very soon. Today is the beginning of an arduous process. Our eyes are wide open, but peace is always worth the effort, especially in this case. They should have been done years ago. They should have been resolved a long time ago. But we're resolving it now. Chairman Kim has the chance to seize an incredible future for his people. Anyone can make war, but only the most courageous can make peace. The current state of affairs cannot endure forever. The people of Korea, North and South, are profoundly talented, industrious, and gifted. These are truly gifted people. They share the same heritage, language, customs, culture, and destiny. But to realize their amazing destiny, to reunite their national family, the menace of nuclear weapons will now be removed. In the meantime, the sanctions will remain in effect. We dream of a future where all Koreans can live together in harmony, where families are reunited and hopes are reborn, and where the light of peace chases away the darkness of war. This bright future is within, and this is what's happening. It is right there. It's within our reach. It's going to be there. It's going to happen. People thought this could never take place. It is now taking place. It's a very great day. It's a very great moment in the history of the world. And Chairman Kim is on his way back to North Korea. And I know for a fact, as soon as he arrives, he's going to start a process that's going to make a lot of people very happy and very safe. So it's an honor to be with everybody today. The media, it's a big gathering of media, I will say. Makes me feel very uncomfortable. But it is what it is. People understand that this is something very important to all of us, including yourselves and your family. So thank you very much for being here. We'll take some questions. Wow. That's a lot of questions. Go ahead. Sure, go ahead. NBC.
President, two questions for you, if you don't mind. First, the man you met today, Kim Jong-un, as you know, has killed family members, has starved his own people, is responsible for the death of Otto Warmbier. Why are you so comfortable calling him very talented?
Well, he is very talented. Anybody that takes over a situation like he did at 26 years of age and is able to run it and run it tough, I don't say he was nice, or I don't say anything about it. He ran it. Very few people at that age, you can take one out of 10,000 probably couldn't do it. Otto Warmbier is a very special person, and he will be for a long time in my life. His parents are good friends of mine. I think without Otto, this would not have happened. Something happened from that day. It was a terrible thing. It was brutal. But a lot of people started to focus on what was going on, including North Korea. I really think that Otto is someone who did not die in vain. I told this to his parents. Special young man, and I have to say, special parents, special people. Otto did not die in vain. He had a lot to do with us being here today. Okay, thank you very much.
That second question for you, sir, was on the security. The second question is security assurances you talked about in your statement. Can you be specific about what assurances you are willing to give to Kim Jong-un? Does that include reducing military capabilities? And just to follow up on your answer.
No, we're not reducing anything. We're not reducing. At some point, I have to be honest, and I used to say this during my campaign, as you know probably better than most. I want to get our soldiers out. I want to bring our soldiers back home. We have right now 32,000 soldiers in South Korea. And I'd like to be able to bring them back home, but that's not part of the equation right now. At some point, I hope it will be, but not right now. We will be stopping the war games, which will save us a tremendous amount of money, unless and until we see that the future negotiation is not going along like it should. But we'll be saving a tremendous amount of money. Plus, I think it's very provocative. Yes, John? Yes, John, go ahead. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were John Roberts. I looked at you. You look just much better, right?
We're frequently confused, Mr. President.
Yes.
Mr. President, the joint statement does not talk about verifiable or irreversible denuclearization.
Yeah.
Is that a concession on the part of the United States?
No, not at all, because if you look at it, I mean, it said we are going to, let's see here, it will be gone. I don't think you can be any more plain than what we're asking. Issues related to the establishment of the new U.S.-DPKR relations, the building. We talk about the guarantees, and we talk about unwavering commitment to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. This is the document that we just signed.
Did you discuss with Chairman Kim methods to verify, either with the United States or international organizations, that very process?
Did you? Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And we'll be verifying. Yeah, we'll be verifying. It'll be verified.
How is it going to be achieved, Mr. President?
Well, it's going to be achieved by having a lot of people there. And as we develop a certain trust, and we think we have done that, Secretary Pompeo has been really doing a fantastic job, his staff, everybody. As we do that, we're going to have a lot of people there, and we're going to be working with them on a lot of other things. But this is complete denuclearization of North Korea, and it will be verified.
Will those people be Americans or international?
Combinations of both. Combinations of both. And we have talked about it, yes. Yeah, go ahead. Be nice. Be respectful.
Be very respectful, sir. What did Kim Jong-un say to you to give you the confidence that for once in the history of North Korea they are not cheating the system and gaming the world and gaming the people who will have to go in and make sure that they're actually giving up their nuclear arsenal?
Yeah, I mean, very fair question. He actually mentioned the fact that they proceeded down a path in the past, and ultimately, as you know, nothing got done. In one case, they took billions of dollars during the Clinton regime, and nothing happened. That was a terrible thing. And he actually brought it up to me. And he said, we have never gone this far. I don't think they've ever had the confidence, frankly, in a president that they have right now for getting things done and having the ability to get things done. And he was very firm in the fact that he wants to do this. I think he might want to do this as much or even more than me, because they see a very bright future for North Korea. So you never know, right? We never know. But I'll tell you what, we signed a very comprehensive document today, and I think most of you have been given that document, but we signed a very, very comprehensive document, and I believe he's going to live up to that document. In fact, when he lands, which is going to be shortly, I think that he will start that process right away. I do. I can only say that I know him for really well. It's been very rhetorical, as you know. I think without the rhetoric, it wouldn't have happened. I think without other things going along, I think the establishment of a new team was very important. They have a great team. But I do. I think he wants to get it done. I really feel that very strongly. Oh, there's John. I think, you know, you two guys look alike when the light is right on the hair is very similar. Let me see who has better hair. He's got pretty good hair, John.
It's the angelic glow of the backlighting, Mr. President, that makes us look so similar. Of course, the denuclearization, the nuclear weapons and biological weapons and whatnot, is one problem in North Korea. Another huge problem is the horrible record that they have on human rights. Was that discussed at all? Is that something that you will tackle?
Yes, it was discussed. It will be discussed more in the future, human rights. And what was also discussed in great detail, John, was the fact that, you know, we have, and I must have had I just countless calls and letters and tweets, anything you can do. They want the remains of their sons back. They want the remains of their fathers and mothers and all of the people that got caught into that really brutal war, which took place to a large extent in North Korea. And I asked for it today, and we got it. That was a very last minute. The remains will be coming back. They're going to start that process immediately. But so many people, even during the campaign, they'd say, is there any way you can work with North Korea to get the remains of my son back or my father back? So many people asked me this question, and, you know, I said, look, we don't get along too well with that particular group of people, but now we do. And he agreed to that so quickly and so nice. It was really a very nice thing, and he understands it. He understands it. So for the thousands and thousands, I guess way over 6,000 that we know of in terms of the remains, they'll be brought back.
The POW-MIA issue clearly is a very important one for thousands.
Especially to a lot of people that are...
What do you, President Trump, expect Kim Jong-un to do about the human rights record regarding the North Korean people?
Right. It was discussed. It was discussed relatively briefly compared to denuclearization. Well, obviously, that's where we started and where we ended. But they will be doing things, and I think he wants to do things. I think he wants to. You'd be very surprised. Very smart, very good negotiator, wants to do the right thing. You know, he brought up the fact that in the past, they took dialogue far. They never went. They never were like we are. There's never been anything like what's taken place now. But they went down the line. Billions of dollars were given, and, you know, the following day, the nuclear program continued. But this is a much different time, and this is a much different president, in all fairness. This is very important to me. This was one of the, perhaps one of the reasons that I won. I campaigned on this issue, as you know very well, John. Okay, whoever those people are, I cannot see you with all the lights, but you don't look like either of the two. Yeah, go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. And first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Touch on the issue of peace treaty and also where you travel to Pyongyang anytime soon.
Well, at a certain time, I will. I said that will be a day that I look very much forward to at the appropriate time. And I also will be inviting Chairman Kim at the appropriate time to the White House. I think it's really going to be something that will be very important. And he has accepted. I said at the appropriate time. We want to go a little bit further down the road. But what we signed today was a lot of things included. And then you have things that weren't included that we got after the deal was signed. I've done that before in my life. And we didn't put it in the agreement because we didn't have time. And I think most of you have been handed out the agreement or soon will. But you have not? Okay. Well, if you could have those agreements passed out. We just finished them just a little while ago. But if you could have the agreements passed out, well, you'll see what we're talking about. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I will second the congratulations, President.
Thank you.
What part did Japan play? And did the abduction issue come up? And
yes.
Also, the fate of the Christians? And the
yes.
Follow-up question is, when we've been doing an interview with Japanese TV, 50,000 American troops are in Japan.
That's true. 50,000 great troops, that's true. Yeah, it did. Abduction, absolutely. This is Prime Minister Abe's, one of his, certainly, other than the whole denuking subject, certainly his, I would say, his main point. And I brought it up, absolutely, and they're going to be working on that. It will be. We didn't put it down in the document, but it will be worked on. Christians, yes, we are. Brought it up very strongly. You know, Franklin Graham spent and spends a tremendous amount of time in North Korea. He's got it very close to his heart. It did come up, and things will be happening. Okay? Thank you. Great question. Yes, John, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, John.
Returning to the question of human rights, you spoke very powerfully on the issue during your State of the Union address.
Right.
You showed that you had the defector in the First Lady's box with the crutches who escaped. And you, at that point, said that North Korea has more brutally oppressed its people than any other regime on Earth. Do you still believe that is the case, having sat down with Kim Jong-un? It doesn't
right.
need to change that.
John, I believe it's a rough situation over there. There's no question about it. And we did discuss it today pretty strongly. I mean, knowing what the main purpose of what we were doing is, denuking, but discussed it at pretty good length. We'll be doing something on it. It's rough. It's rough in a lot of places, by the way. Not just there, but it's rough. And we will continue that, and I think ultimately we'll agree to something. But it was discussed at length outside of the nuclear situation, one of the primary topics.
But okay? Do you think that needs to change to bring on this glorious new era you talked about? Are they going to have to?
I think it will change, yeah. I think it probably has to, but I think it will. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Steve, that's you, Steve, right there.
Yes, sir. Thank you. What timetable do you envision for their denuclearization? And in the meantime, are you thinking about easing any sanctions?
Well, you know, scientifically, I've been watching and reading a lot about this, and it does take a long time to, you know, pull off complete denuclearization. It takes a long time. Scientifically, you have to wait certain periods of time, and a lot of things happen. But despite that, once you start the process, it means it's pretty much over. You can't use them. That's the good news. And that's going to start very, very soon. I believe that's going to start very soon. We will do it as fast as it can mechanically and physically be done, Steve.
And the sanctions?
The sanctions will come off when we are sure that the nukes are no longer a factor. Sanctions played a big role, but they'll come off at that point. I hope it's going to be soon, but they'll come off. They, as you know, and as I've said, the sanctions right now remain. But at a certain point, I actually look forward to taking them off. And they'll come off when we know we're down the road where it's not going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Congratulations on this historic summit.
Thank you very much. Congratulations to everybody, by the way. Congratulations to everybody. Go ahead.
You signed a document with Kim Jong-un. It's essentially a piece of paper. Yesterday we had a briefing from the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. He said the following: many presidents previously have signed off on pieces of paper, only to find that the North Koreans either didn't promise what we thought they had or actually reneged on those promises. What makes this time different, Mr. President?
Well, you have a different administration. You have a different president. You have a different Secretary of State. You have people that are, you know, it's very important to them, and we get it done. The other groups, maybe it wasn't a priority. I don't think they could have done it if it was a priority, frankly. I don't think they honestly could have done it even if it was a priority. And it would have been easier back then. Would have been, for me, it would have been much easier if this were 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And I'm not just blaming President Obama. I mean, this goes back for 25 years. This should have happened. I was given a very tough hand. I was given this. I was given the Iran deal and plenty of other problems. But we are we're doing really well. And the Iran deal, I have to be honest, I did it because nuclear is always number one to me. Nuclear is number one. But on the Iran deal, I think Iran is a different country now than it was 3 or 4 months ago. I don't think they're looking so much to the Mediterranean. I don't think they're looking so much at Syria like they were with total confidence. I don't think they're so confident right now. But I hope, with that being said, I hope that at the appropriate time, after these sanctions kick in, and they are brutal, what we've put on Iran, I hope that they're going to come back and negotiate a real deal, because I'd love to be able to do that. But right now it's too soon for that. Yes, please.
President, you often talk about establishing diplomatic relations, exchanging ambassadors. How long before that happens?
Good question. Hopefully soon, but we'll have to get things moving first. Very little bit early for that. We have to get things moving. Yes, go ahead. Hi.
Clarifying, when you said you're stopping war games, you are stopping the military exercises with South Korea?
Yeah, we've done exercises for a long period of time working with South Korea, and we call them war games, and I call them war games, and they're tremendously expensive. The amount of money that we spend on that is incredible, and South Korea contributes, but not 100%, which is certainly a subject that we have to talk to them about also. And that has to do with the military expense and also the trade. So we're doing that. We actually have a new deal with South Korea in terms of the trade deal. But we have to talk to them. We have to talk to many countries about treating us fairly. But the war games are very expensive. We pay for a big majority of them. We fly in bombers from Guam. I said it when I first started. I said, where do the bombers come from? Guam. Nearby. I said, oh, great. Nearby. Where's nearby? 6.5 hours. 6.5 hours, that's a long time for these big, massive planes to be flying to South Korea to practice and then drop bombs all over the place and then go back to Guam. I know a lot about airplanes. It's very expensive. And I didn't like it. And what I did say is, and I think it's very provocative, I have to tell you, Jennifer, it's a very provocative situation. When I see that, and you have a country right next door. So under the circumstances that we're negotiating a very comprehensive, complete deal, I think it's inappropriate to be having war games. So number one, we save money a lot. And number two, it really is something that I think they very much appreciated.
Does North Korea give you something in return, though?
Well, we've gotten, you know, I've heard that. I mean, some of the people that, I don't know, maybe they really mean it. I don't always want to go against the press because I just don't, especially not today. This is too important. But I noticed that some of the people were saying that the president has agreed to meet. He has given up so much. I gave up nothing. I'm here. I haven't slept in 25 hours, but I thought it was appropriate to do because we've been negotiating for literally round the clock with them and with us and with John and with Mike and a whole team of very talented people. But we haven't given up anything other than you're right. I agreed to meet. And I think the meeting was every bit as good for the United States as it was for North Korea. But I just wrote down some of the things we got. And they, you know, they got a meeting. But only a person that dislikes Donald Trump would say that I've agreed to make a big commitment. Sure, I've agreed to take a period of time and come here and meet, and that's good. But I think it's great for us and as a country, and I think it's good for them. But what did they do to justify this meeting? Secured commitment for complete denuclearization. That's the big thing. They secured the release of three American hostages. They already gave them to us 2 months ago. These people are now living happily back in their homes with their families. And it was pretty rough for them, to put it mildly. Secured the commitment to recover the remains, including these are of fallen heroes. And they're giving a commitment. They're starting it immediately to recover the remains. And I just went through how many people asked me about it. I was amazed, actually. So many people would ask me, is it possible? Is it possible? At that time, we had no relationship to Chairman Kim or to anybody else in North Korea. You know, it was a very closed society. So we're getting the remains back. Secured the halt of all missile and nuclear tests. For how long has it been? 7 months? You haven't had a missile go up. For 7 months, you haven't had a nuclear test. You haven't had a nuclear explosion. I remember a nuclear event took place, 8.8 on the Richter scale. And they announced, I heard it on the radio, they announced that a massive, you know, a earthquake took place somewhere in Asia. And then they said it was in North Korea, and then they found out it was a nuclear test. I said, I never heard of a Richter scale in the high eights.
We'll have more on this in our next newscast. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Trump-Kim summit in Singapore was certainly rich when it comes to optics. But what about the substance? Both leaders are clearly looking for a win. A process has started. There are plenty of obstacles ahead and no shortage of people whose worst nightmare might come true. Peace coming to the Korean Peninsula. Crosstalking the Singapore Summit, I'm joined by my guest, Gareth Porter in Washington. He's an independent investigative journalist and historian, as well as author of Manufactured Crisis, The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare. Also in Washington, we have Balbina Huang. She is a visiting professor at Georgetown University and a former senior special advisor for Ambassador Christopher Hill at the U.S. State Department. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Gareth, let me go to you first. You've been writing about what was happening before the summit. What are your reactions to the summit now that it's gone into history? Go ahead, Gareth.
You know, Peter, it was never the case, in my view, that this summit was going to produce a substantive document that was going to represent, negotiated agreements on some of the tricky issues that necessarily will have to be resolved in reaching the agreement on nuclear denuclearization in Korea. Therefore, you know, the rather unsubstantive document that was produced didn't surprise me at all. I thought this was about what one would expect from the first meeting ever between a U.S. president and the current leader of North Korea, given the history of that issue and the politics that attend the issue, particularly in the United States. You know, obviously, this is not going to be a document that's going to give you a roadmap to a settlement. It's not going to have the timetable that some people in the media said was missing. Of course, it wasn't. There's no surprise there. This was a political document that shows that they got along well and they're ready to start a process.
Balbina, basically the same question to you. I mean, I agree with Gareth. It's not really a roadmap. I mean, at least the document that they released. I mean, it's kind of long on hope. Is this a beginning of something? Balbina in Washington, go ahead.
Well, I certainly agree with Gareth, and I've also argued exactly the same thing. But I also argued that this entire summit was never really about the nuclear issue. And in fact, really, the nuclear issue in and of itself has been distracting. The nuclear issue was never really the problem. The nuclear issue with North Korea was really a symptom of the much bigger problem of North Korea itself really being the problem itself, meaning that was really the heart of the issue, the division of the Korean Peninsula itself. And really what we're talking about is the division of the Korean Peninsula and that being at the heart of the issue in Northeast Asia and the stability of the entire region.
Well, that's a very interesting point, Gareth. It's interesting. Balbina's kind of gotten ahead of me because that's where I really wanted to go here. Because this process, if it is a process, we really don't know yet. But it's Trump owns it now, okay? And it seems to me that he's actually given a stamp of approval for the Koreans to actually get down to business. I think Balbina's point's very interesting there because this is, if anything is actually really going to happen, it's going to happen between the Koreans themselves, okay? And I think that's the door that has been opened here, and it looks like the Koreans north and south want to walk through it. Go ahead, Gareth.
Well, I think Melvin is right that that was the sort of missing link in the whole presentation of the problem in Singapore, and it obviously was a crucial part of the run-up to this summit that both North and South Korea were ready to go, I think, further than ever before in terms of inter-Korean peace. And I'm quite sure that President Moon's role in bringing President Trump along with the process that he started with North Korea was crucial to getting Trump to Singapore. And so there's no doubt in my mind that that is a crucial part of the background and the dynamics that will continue to support a process of reaching agreement. I think it's a very positive, extremely positive part of the entire issue that is going to help to propel this toward the ultimate goal of a U.S.-North Korea agreement.
Okay. Balbina, one of the interesting things, the next step that's possible, and again, we're dealing with the Koreans, the United States never officially went to war against North Korea. It was a quote-unquote police action, remember, under Truman. But for the Koreans, it's a very different thing. If they could, and the next, I think, reasonable step would be a peace treaty ending that conflict 68 years after the fact. But that is a really interesting move because if hostilities come to an end on the peninsula, then ultimately you have to ask the question, then why are U.S. troops there, okay? You can justify it now because there's an armistice, but if a peace comes, then that question is, maybe not immediate, and the North Koreans aren't pushing it now, but it's going to be something you're going to have to confront. Go ahead, Balbina in Washington.
Well, this is exactly the heart of the issue. And I think what people don't seem to understand is that, again, we're conflating all of these issues. So Americans, for the last, you know, especially in the last 6 months to a year, we have sort of, you know, distilled this down to Americans are suddenly frightened about, you know, nuclear bombs raining down on American cities from North Korea. Okay, well, this was completely, essentially, this was never really the threat. If you're really worried about Americans in the homeland being frightened about North Korean threats, you should frankly be far more worried about cyber attacks. That is actually a far more realistic threat. And, you know, every single American should be far more worried. And, you know, sitting in your home and having your internet connection go down and, you know, your Facebook connection going down or your bank account.
Your bank account.
That
yeah,
is
right.
Far
yeah.
more realistic.
Far more realistic.
Well, exactly. Or your electricity grid or, you know, these are the things that, you know, most Americans should be frightened about. But aside from that, so you know, a nuclear attack, that is completely unrealistic. But the point being that there's that issue, number one. But the point being that, first of all, peace, you know, declaring the end of the war, yes, that is between the two Koreas. And it is not for anybody else, whether it's China or the United States or any other country that was involved during the Korean War, or the United Nations, which was the official combatant, right, to be involved. The two Koreas must decide this. But let me also point out that peace does not equal stability on the Korean Peninsula,
okay,
which also does not equal unification,
okay,
which also does not necessarily mean that the end of conflict or hostility. So these are all different things, which also does not mean the end of North Korea's missile programs or the end of North Korea's threats or the end of the North Korean regime or the end of North Korea's nuclear programs. So all of these issues are all completely separate, and the world, different countries in the region, and Americans, we all need to understand these as separate issues. And I think everybody just thought that on June 12th, that President Trump and Kim Jong-un would sit down, and suddenly Americans and everybody else would feel safe if the summit succeeded. Or if it failed, we would suddenly go to war.
Well,
and it's simply not the case.
Well, I think the media, and Gareth, you've been talking about this. I mean, the media has been pretty shameful in the narratives that they've been pushing. But that almost has everything to do with domestic politics in the United States.
So
let me go to Gareth here, because you written recently on this topic. Go ahead.
Well, yes, of course, it's true that the media have played a very nasty role in the run-up to this summit, really trying to discredit the idea that there could be an agreement that would effectively denuclearize. And I guess I, from what I heard Malvina say just a moment ago, I think I disagree with the conclusion that there can't be a connection between the various aspects of a peace agreement between the United States and North Korea, as well as between North and South Korea, and denuclearization. I think there is every reason to believe that those two things are intimately connected.
I didn't say
they
can't. I just said that they don't necessarily have to.
You'll be able to reply. Finish up your point there, Gareth, and we'll go to...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So the point I want to make is that the media have been saying that North Korea has no interest in ever giving up its nuclear weapons. And that, I think, is simply not supported by the historical evolution of North Korean policy. Excuse me. They have, in fact, made it clear that they believe that North Korea's interests lie in reaching an agreement with the United States, and that their nuclear program, as well as their missile program, have been aimed at ultimately that outcome.
Yeah.
That was part of what I wrote about in my latest piece. Starting in 2013, when Kim Jong-un came in to power, he immediately embarked on a build-up, it's true, a nuclear and missile program that would give him more to bargain with. But it was also made clear to Americans who met with the North Koreans in 2013 that the intention was that when the United States was ready to negotiate seriously, North Korea would negotiate on denuclearization in order to achieve that ultimate goal of reaching a peace agreement
Gareth,
with the United States.
Let me jump in here. I want to go to Balbina and give her 40 seconds to reply before we go to the break. Go ahead, Balbina in Washington. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first, I didn't say that it can't be linked. I just simply said that they don't necessarily all link together. So I don't think we necessarily disagree on that. What I will dispute, though, however, is your conclusion that North Korea will bargain away the nuclear weapons. And the reason I say that is that the nuclear weapons are a strategic. Nuclear weapons serve a strategic purpose.
Deterrence.
And I don't think that the nuclear weapons. Well, absolutely, there are deterrents, but the purpose they serve is not so that the United States will provide the security guarantee. It's not just about the United States.
Okay, Bobby, let me jump in here. We're gonna go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the Singapore summit. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, let's go back to Balbina in Washington. Right before we went to the break, you were trying to finish up a point. Go ahead.
Okay. The single biggest mistake that people make when analyzing the Korean Peninsula is that the focus is on the United States.
I agree.
You have to understand that for the entire Korean Peninsula, and remember that North Korea and South Korea have only existed as separate entities for the last 70 years. Korea has been around for 2,000 years. For 2,000 years, Korea has been surrounded by great powers. United States has only been around, as far as Korea has been concerned, for 100 years. So for North Korea, the United States, for the last 70 years. So for North Korea, nuclear weapons, United States is only one actor. So the nuclear weapons serves the strategic purpose about independence and security for all the great powers. So even if the United States provides a guarantee of independence and security for North Korea now, it's still about independence against China, Russia, and potentially any other great power that threatens the Korean Peninsula in the future.
Okay, said
that's why North Korea will not give up its nuclear weapons to the United States.
Okay, to the United
every other great power.
To the United States. Sorry. Gareth, I mean, Balbina brings up a fascinating point because when in watching Kim and Trump sign the document and then they spoke to reporters and then Trump's rather strange, I have to say, encounter with the media afterwards because it was so vague. What does denuclearization actually mean? Because we really don't know what that means, okay? Because Balbina brings up a very good point. And so it's still kind of vague here. And that's the obstacle here. I mean, we had a lot of optics, you know, photo ops and stuff like that, and it looked good and it was felt good. But now there's the hard work ahead. Go ahead, Gareth.
Well, you know, I don't think it's really quite true that we have no idea what denuclearization means.
Like a time frame. Okay. I mean, and then sanctions. I mean,
well, if
it takes 5 or 7 years to go through this, and then sanctions are only dropped then. I mean, again, this is all really, really vague. Okay. I'm for this process. Very much for this process. I much agree with what Balbina is saying. But it's a Korean deal that has to be worked out here. But I mean, still, the language here is so very vague. Okay. And expectations are higher than they were. Go ahead, Gareth.
Yeah, the language is vague, and I think that's to be expected. But I think that both sides have agreed on a principle that there will be a phased process in which both sides will make certain moves in tandem with one another. I think that's the key to this. And that means that the North Koreans have agreed to basically get to have the destruction of nuclear weapons or a process that obviously would be IAEA
driven, watched over
to get rid of the nuclear weapons as well as the capability to deliver them, certainly to deliver them to the United States at the very least. And that process of figuring out what the precise relationship is in terms of time between the different steps and which steps go with which is obviously a very detailed process that can't be done in a few days or a few weeks. It's going to take some months to do it. I think the agreement at this point has gone farther than any previous agreement in this regard. And I've looked at the record of what happened in the Clinton and Bush administrations. The U.S. government was nowhere near where they are today in terms of agreeing to the kind of sort of arrangements, the phased mating of denuclearization with the political security moves and economic moves that are contemplated in this agreement. So I think that this is really on track, and I have to say that I disagree with the idea that North Korea cannot exist without nuclear weapons. If you go back to the early period of the 2000s, there was a...
Okay,
well, I thought that was the implication. I'd be glad to have you clarify it, but I want to simply state that I believe that North Korea does... That North Korea does believe that it can exist securely without nuclear weapons as long as it has certain preconditions that have been realized.
So you're saying security guarantees. I mean, Mike Pompeo came out and said that. Okay, Balbina, you wanted to jump in. That's the whole point of the program. Go!
Okay, well, let me again clarify. I did not say that North Korea cannot survive without nuclear weapons. All I simply... one more time... nuclear weapons serve, it is one, simply one tool of serving the purpose of independence and security for the Korean Peninsula. Now, can other substitutes serve that purpose? Absolutely. And at some point, North Korea may decide that something else can be substituted for nuclear weapons. In fact, North Korea and Kim Jong-un may have decided that another asymmetric weapon could easily, in fact, be much more efficiently serve the purpose of nuclear weapons. And, in fact, perhaps cyber weapons, for example, could actually substitute and be much better than nuclear weapons. That is, in fact, what may have brought him to the table. I don't know. So, yes, I agree. North Korea could have made that decision. I don't know. So, absolutely, I'm not saying... It has to be nuclear weapons. So that was my point.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what statement you read, but that statement absolutely is not the most comprehensive. Go back and read the six-party agreements. And I don't know why you're referring to the agree framework. The six-party agreements was absolutely the most comprehensive. This statement signed yesterday was a joint agreement, and it completely just reiterated in the vaguest terms every other previous agreement that was already signed by North Korea. It simply reiterated in the vaguest terms everything that was reiterated. That is simply all it did.
Okay, let me...
And it just restarts all over again.
Okay,
lengthy process.
Okay, but this time it will
That's
be different.
That's all it did.
I think this time it will be different because we have an historical precedent, and it's called Libya, and it's also the U.S. walking away from the Iran deal. Gareth, this is what really is interesting. It's an interesting mix right here because it's a question of trust. I mean, why, you know, if I were in the North Korean leadership, I'd be saying, well, why would we go down a long road of negotiations when this president, this country that we're dealing with, walks away from internationally agreed agreements. I mean, this throws into the mix here. And of course, Bolton really wanted to poison the well when he was saying, yeah, the Libyan example, you know. And of course, I don't think Trump was aware of it when he was backing it up at the time. Okay. The reason why I'm saying that, because I saw his press conference and he's kind of thin on historical facts. Okay. So, I mean, talk about Libya, talk about Iran. When it comes to the North Koreans, go ahead, Gareth.
Well, we know that the Libya model that was advanced by John Bolton was aimed at sabotaging the whole process of reaching a summit and beyond. And that failed, fortunately, for a very good reason, that both Trump and Kim did not want to have that interfere. And both took steps to overcome that obstacle. And I think that's why we are talking about the summit as we are now. But I think it's not just the Libya model that is the problem in terms of Trump, in terms of mistrust and Trump. It's really the wider, much more fundamental problem that the U.S. political system has a serious difficulty actually reaching an agreement that can be then transferred from one administration to the next. It appears that we've lost the ability to pass international treaties in this country. And that, I think, is a serious problem that I'm sure Kim Jong-un and the North Koreans have been thinking about. They are going to insist, I'm quite sure, on a treaty. And the question I have really is whether at this point the U.S. Congress is going to be willing and able to deliver on an international treaty surrounding this agreement.
Babina, as usual, you want to jump in. Let
me point something out. First of all, one more time, please understand that not everything is about the United States.
Hang on. My point is very different than nuclear weapons. My point is trust. You can talk about cyber weapons, you can talk about nuclear weapons, but you have to talk about the ability to negotiate.
You brought up Libya, Iran, and trust. So that those are the three things I would like to address.
Go ahead.
Number one, trust is simply, I think, overemphasized in international relations. Trust is simply overemphasized. Let me point out that North Korea, the Korean Peninsula, has never trusted any neighbor ever for 2,000 years. You have to understand the mindset of the Korean Peninsula, Korean Kingdom,
Balbina,
which has been a sovereign kingdom.
Why was there a summit? If they have no trust of outsiders, why did they have put on this whole charade in Singapore? It doesn't make any sense to me.
If you give me a chance, they certainly want something. That's why they sat at the table. Go right ahead. I'm trying to explain this. So the Korean Peninsula has been an independent kingdom for almost 2,000 years. But it doesn't trust its surrounding powers because it has been constantly invaded. And for the last 100 years, it was colonized, its sovereignty was taken away, and then it was divided. And both sides, both Korean sides, the North and the South, believe that it was divided not because it wanted to be,
but because
by the great powers, and that it went to war, because it was forced to, and that the South is occupied. Now, why did Kim Jong-un come to the summit? Because it wants recognition, and it wants to assert, Kim Jong-un wants to assert his legitimacy, and he wants to be recognized as a world power. That's why he came to the summit. Now, whether or not he was going to give up, bargain away his nuclear weapons, we still don't know.
We
still don't know. Yes, that is correct. Now, back to Libya and Iran. North Korea does not believe that Libya and Iran are good examples. Yes, North Korea follows other countries, but North Korea says we are unlike any other country. Here's the thing. North Korea never trusted the United States. In 1994, before Libya and Iran, we've run out of time.
Many thanks to my guests in Washington, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, Community Public Radio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.